Hey, it's Scott Petrek with another episode of the Brown Zone Zone Coverage Podcast. The Browns have been busy. After 2 weeks of OTAs, they conclude mandatory minicamp today. Then the players get a six-week break before training camp in the long grind of the season. Here to discuss, as always, is Dave Chudowski of Go, the WKYC Morning News. Hey, Chud.
Hey, Scott, good to be with you again. I kind of look at the schedule more like this. I revolve it around the Petrak golf game. You have golf, then you have mini camp, then you have more golf, and then golf comes to a screeching halt once training camp starts. So that's kind of how I look at it.
Yeah, that's about right. That's about right, Chad. I got a lot of golf to play in the next 6 weeks.
That's right.
Yeah, so I hope I'm going to get started on that tomorrow, as a matter of fact.
I bet you are.
But it's crazy how the schedule works, right? You have the off season, and it feels like it just gets going, and then boom, there's a break, and then it's the season, and the season takes forever, you know?
Yep. And for people who are probably like, wait a minute, this seems kind of odd for minicamp. Minicamp's usually a week later, right? But it's everything's bumped up because of the Hall of Fame game, or am I wrong on that?
No, you're exactly right. There's the minicamp's usually next week. So what happened is, because of the early preseason game, right? They start the Hall of Fame game on August 3rd, and they're in it because of Joe Thomas getting enshrined 2 days later on August 5th. Because of that, they report to training camp a week earlier than normal. So Kevin Stefanski wanted to give the players the same six-week break. So he got rid of 1 week of OTAs, moved up minicamp, and that's why it's this week. And the thought is, the week of OTAs that they gave up, they'll just make up for it with that extra week of training camp.
Got to feel like the players appreciate that. I think behind closed doors, that probably goes a long way.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think probably by the rules, he could have either shortened their break or tried to squeeze in another week somehow, right? But I think this makes sense. And the fact is, I find an interesting dichotomy, Chud, is the coaches talk so much about the importance of these offseason practices, right? And every practice and every rep. And I get that. And I'm not saying that's wrong, because it is, right? Everything's important, right? Every story you do on TV, every story I write, like, we think they mean something. They're reps or whatever. But you also have to manage the players physically, mentally. So if you start training camp on July 22nd, right? And let's say they go to the playoffs, right? If they happen to go to the Super Bowl, they're playing until the middle of February. Like, that's a long stretch. So I think cutting them some slack when you can and giving them the six-week break that you probably feel like they deserve and they're used to, I think that just makes sense.
Yeah. Hey, Scott, before we get into mini camp and everything Browns on the field, off the field, you know, I just wanted to say, you know, since the last time we talked, obviously, Jim Donovan, voice of the Browns, of course, Channel 3, I've worked with him since 2007. He came out and let everyone know that he's battling leukemia again. And I just want to say, you know, our thoughts and prayers are with him, and we wish the best for Jimmy. I mean, the voice of the Browns, he is, you know, not from Cleveland. He's from Boston, but boy, he's as Cleveland as it gets, and nobody loves the Browns and his job more than Jim Donovan. And I can tell you that firsthand, and we're all praying for him. And I know personally for me, I wouldn't be where I'm at today without him. I grew up, he and Bob Costas, those were the two guys I wanted to be. You know, that was my goal, you know, to be Jim Donovan. And it was incredible to work alongside him for 11 years. I interned with him. You know, he is the best in the business, I'm telling you. I feel, you know, sad. My heart goes out to him and his family. But at the same point, I've seen him beat it once before, so we're going to see him do it again. And I just wanted to, you know, put that out there.
Yeah, I'm glad you did. That was on my list, too, to bring up, Chud. You know, obviously, I've gotten to know Jimmy relatively well, you know, over the 20 years I've been doing this. I always enjoy, and you know, maybe people won't get this. I think you'll get it, Chud. Like, in the media room, my seat is on the end, on the aisle. And all of a sudden, you look up, and Jimmy will be standing there, and he'll be like, can I ask you something? And just the way he says it, it's like, yeah, Jim, you can ask me something, right? And then you wind up talking for the next half an hour, right? I don't know how many times I've texted my wife. I'm like, I'm going to be a half hour later. She's like, why? I got caught talking to Jimmy, right? Just because there's always something to talk about. He's a blast to talk to. He knows his stuff. So I get a kick out of that. I get a kick out of talking to him at training camp. You know, I talked to him at OTAs, and I didn't have any idea that he was going through this again. And we just had a normal talk about the Celtics, I think. We were talking, and, you know, and then he obviously hasn't been – he wasn't there at the second week of OTAs. I haven't seen him this week at minicamp. So, you know, I'm sure he's – I know I saw him on TV last night, but I'm sure he's cutting back on exactly where – how many things he can do and where he can go. So, he'll certainly be missed if he's not around Berea as much as he normally is. And I'm with you, Chud. How he beat it the first time and the story of that – was really inspirational, and why can't it just be the same thing again?
Yeah, trust me, he will want to get back as quickly as possible. You know, you said that about stories. I have heard him tell so many stories. He is hilarious, too.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy is just so funny, and you want to be in the room with him. You want to hear these stories, and, you know, like I said, when I interned with him in the late 90s, that's when I first got a, you know, dose of it, and, man, you just always wanted to be around him. And he's just, you know, what's amazing about him, Scott, and I'm sure you've experienced this. He could tell you almost every play and every game since he started doing play-by-play in 99. Wow. It's incredible. He could give you a memory and a play from 2003 or 2005 and be like, oh, it was that game, that play, that guy. It's incredible. His memory is amazing.
Yeah, I know. And I don't have that recollection, right? And you're right, he does. And he's so quick. And then he's just outstanding at what he does, right? Just the play-by-play aspect of it, he's phenomenal. But just his overall knowledge of the Browns and just how quick he thinks. He's a trip to be around, there's no doubt.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure that, you know, we talked about Jimmy. And, you know, I know all of Cleveland's going to be behind him. But now let's go to mini camp. And you got another practice today, right? We're taping this on Thursday.
Yeah, we're taping this about 10 o'clock Thursday morning. Practice starts at 11. It's going to be a quick one. It's the kind of last day of school, right? Getaway day. I don't think players are going to talk. We're going to talk to the position coaches, which is good, right? Get an update on some of the guys. Talk to Bill Callahan about rookie offense, rookie tackle, DeJuan Jones. You know, Chad O'Shea, the receivers coach, can talk about Elijah Moore in that room. Ben Bloom, the new D-line coach, can talk about all the changes on the D-line. So I feel like it's a real valuable time when we get to talk to these position coaches. It's all at once. It's going to be a short practice. I don't know if they'll do 2 minute or red zone, whatever they do. They've been doing a lot of red zone in mini camp just because it's a passing camp. So there's a lot of that goes on in the red zone. But, yeah, then the guys go on a break. But these last couple, you know, we got to watch one OTA practice each week for 2 weeks, and then we get to watch all three minicamp practices this week. I don't think today will be eventful, you know, because it's going to be a quick one. But you've seen a good amount, a little bit of 11-on-11, but not full speed 11-on-11. But you can see where guys are lining up, which, you know, is kind of your initial depth chart view. And then, you know, we got to talk about Deshaun Watson, probably at his best practice on Tuesday. Still threw well Wednesday, but the defense made more plays, you know, which happens a lot, right? You go through these training camps and stuff. So offense or defense will have a really good day. The next day, the other side bounces back. That's just kind of how it works. But he's throwing it really well, and he threw it as well as I've seen him throw it on Tuesday, especially in the red zone. I think there was an incompletion early in the red zone drill, and then it was a bunch of touchdowns in a row. Amari Cooper, Elijah Moore, Donovan Peoples-Jones, and I wrote about it today, a couple weeks ago, he talked at the Browns golf outing, the charity golf outing, and he brought up confidence and how important regaining his confidence is, and I just think that's so important to, if he's going to be better, right? We've talked about it a million times. They need him to be so much better. They need him to be the old Deshaun Watson, and his confidence is such a key part of that. And he has mentioned that multiple times. So I stressed that again in the story I wrote yesterday, that he feels that confidence growing. I think a practice like Tuesday's boosts that confidence, right? Reaffirms everything he's seeing, takes it to another level. So I asked him yesterday, because he talked, did he ever have doubts about that, right? You go through the 700 days without starting, got all the other stuff going on, and you know, you play poorly by his standards last year in those six games. You know, was he ever worried about that confidence not returning? And he said no. He said it was just a simple matter of so much time away that you needed to get back. You're rusty. You're not thinking as clearly, as sharply, right? You're not thinking as quickly. But he always felt like that confidence would come back and his game would come back. And now he doesn't know if all the rust is going to be gone week one or not. But he really feels, and I think he feels like his old self, and he's starting to look like his old self.
And it's not just Watson saying the confidence factor. Others in the huddle, his teammates are feeling it, right?
Oh, yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, tight end David Njoku said he's slinging that bleep. Joe Bitonio said he feels like he's different in the huddle, right? He calls the plays better. Just the familiarity with Kevin Stefanski and the system and his teammates. And Nick Chubb, right? Nick Chubb doesn't give a whole lot of, you know, not, I won't say that because he's good on other people. But I thought it was interesting and insightful when Nick Chubb said there's a calmness about Watson this year, right? And Chubb's only been here the last few days for minicamp, but he's already noticed that Watson seems more calm. And you would expect that, right? I mean, year two, given all the stuff that was going on a year ago. But for his teammates to recognize it, I do think that's an important factor.
So it sounds like, you know, from what I've seen and heard, and I haven't been there, you have, the offense seems to be locked in. I mean, and, you know, how much can we take out of that from just what you're seeing right now?
Yeah, I mean, I'm always leery to get overboard with the practice, let alone a practice where nobody's in pads, there's no contact, yeah, there's no pass rush, right? So I don't want to get carried away, but I think it's worth noting that he's throwing it well. And I think he's throwing it much better than he did at the beginning of OTAs. Like, we were out there the first OTA practice we were allowed to watch, and they tried to take a bunch of deep shots, and they missed a bunch. Like, you watched incompletions, and they tried to stretch it, and he missed it. And then the next OTAs we got to watch, they went deep again, and he hit a couple of those to Marquise Goodwin, right? Good throws, really good throws. Then he had a throw where offensive coordinator Alex Van Pelt said it gave him goosebumps, right? Which seems a little silly for an OTA practice, but that's what he said. Unsolicited, it gave me goosebumps. The hair on my arm stood up, and it was a throw in the red zone down the seam to Elijah Moore where he had to throw it over the hook defender, right? The guy positioned to stop that and fit it over that guy into the tiny window, and he threw it right on target. So we saw that progression, and then it built up to that Tuesday practice where he rarely missed. So I it's worth noting. I don't want to get carried away. You got to see it. You know, you got to see consistency. You got to see it when there's contact. You know, receivers, there's, you know, defense isn't playing press coverage, right? I mean, there's a whole thing that this is all slanted toward the offense. The offense is supposed to look good. But you have Watson looking good. I thought Amari Cooper, coming off that core muscle surgery, had a really strong practice Tuesday. He took Wednesday off, worked on the side. But he looked good. Don Peoples-Jones made some catches in the red zone. Elijah Moore is showing up. And you expect him to show up, right? Like, the Browns fully expect Elijah Moore, who they traded, got in a trade with the Jets, to have a big impact on this offense. So the fact that you are seeing him make catches, you're seeing him move around formations, that's important and that's vital, because I think for this offense to be what the Browns predict it will be, he's going to have to play a huge role.
Yeah, these receivers so far have a lot of high praise for Watson, right? They're liking what they see coming their way.
Yeah, there's no doubt, right? I think there's a good vibe among the offense, right? And, you know, I don't know if we talked about this last summer or not, Chad, the DeAndre Hopkins being a free agent, right? So that's kind of hanging over everything. But I think inside the team is a sense of, hey, we like what we have at receiver, right? Amari Cooper, Elijah Moore, Donovan Peoples-Jones coming off of a strong year, Marquise Goodwin, who adds that deep threat, Cedric Tillman, the rookie third-round draft pick, has made some impressive catches early. And I think it's hard for a rookie to catch your attention sometimes with all these veterans. And he's caught my attention. Kevin Stefanski said a lot of good things about him, but it made a really nice back shoulder catch to end practice on Tuesday in the end zone. So I think there's this sense of, yeah, the receivers really like Watson. Watson is comfortable with the receivers he has. Yes, he would love DeAndre Hopkins, their friends and all that. But I think there's a sense of, hey, we like what we have here. And yeah, if you had Hopkins, great. But I think there's a sense that we don't need him from the players. And I also feel that way from the organization. Like, you know, Hopkins' name is always going to be there until he signs because of the connection with Deshaun Watson from their time together in Houston. But I don't expect the Browns to sign him. The Browns are comfortable with who they have. They've already devoted a bunch of resources. Hopkins is going to want a ton of money that the Browns don't really have under their salary cap. They're already pushing stuff down the road. And,
yeah,
you know, I don't think they believe he's a perfect fit. I don't think they want to pay a second receiver $15 million, and they're already paying Amari Cooper that. So, you know, the name will continue, the buzz will continue to be there, but I don't think it's a realistic expectation for fans to think that they're going to sign DeAndre Hopkins.
Sure. Where do you think Hopkins will end up? I mean, you don't have to talk long about it, but,
yeah,
you know, just you have a gut feeling?
No, that's a good question. You know, the first reported visit he's going to make is to Tennessee. Which seems a little weird because, you know, Tennessee kind of feels like a fringe contender, right? They're talking about, you know, there were talks about maybe do they get rid of Derrick Henry, and they haven't. But what are they going to do at quarterback, right? Like, they feel like they're taking a step back. But if you go get a guy like Hopkins, you know, I think that is a sign of Mike Vrabel saying, hey, we're not going anywhere, right? So, you know, but my guess is I'd probably go Buffalo, Chud. You know, they're looking for that number two guy. Gabe Davis didn't have a great year last year. I think there's a lot of pressure in Buffalo to get to the Super Bowl,
yeah,
right? So I would say Buffalo.
Yeah, don't bring up Gabe Davis around me. I'm a little salty about his fantasy effort last year. I thought it was going to be better. But anyway.
I had him too, buddy.
Yeah, well, I think, yeah, no
probably
doubt.
Probably because you told me to take him.
I'm like, well, I'm going to punch myself in the face and be like, yeah, I told you to take him. Oh, man. Anyway, my last thing on Watson, and you know, I think we've hit a bunch of things here with them, so that's good. But the other thing I wanted to talk to you about was the offense being different. I know that was a subject that came up this week, right? How much different does the offense look, and how much different do you think it will be? And are there any hints as to how much different it will be?
Yeah, that's a great question, Sean. I mean, that's been a theme kind of since the end of last season. If you remember, the day after they lose to Pittsburgh in the finale, to clean out locker day, Watson talks and says he was going to have a sit down with Kevin Stefanski, and they were going to talk about how the offense was going to change. So, you know, it's kind of been there. Kevin Stefanski doesn't really like to go into detail, you know, about how it's going to change and what have you. And I think we're going to see it as the season plays out. But there's no doubt they're going to throw the ball more, in my opinion, especially early in games. I think they're going to go more three wide receivers and less two tight end and three tight end personnel, which has been a staple for Kevin Stefanski. More shotgun, more runs out of the shotgun for Nick Chubb. Obviously, more quarterback runs than we saw with Baker Mayfield or Jacoby Brissett because you have Deshaun Watson in his skill set. More quarterback runs designed and more quarterback runs scrambles off schedule plays, right? So I think it will look significantly different. What was interesting yesterday is Watson said he was asked about the playbook and he said everything's new, which there's no way that can be right, right? There's no way Kevin Stefanski threw out his entire playbook that he's been working on his whole life and has had in place since he got here in 2020. But that's what Watson said. So then he gets about four follow-up questions about it. And I think what he settled on was the structure and the foundation are the same, but everything else has changed outside of that. And I think that just refers to what I was talking about earlier. More throwing, more three wides, right? Like, I think it's going to look different from a stylistic standpoint, from a schematic standpoint. Obviously, not all the plays are new, right? They're going to run the same handoffs. They're going to run wide zone and gap scheme and all that. They're going to run the rollouts with the receiver running across. Like, that stuff's not going to change. But I think it's philosophically, it's going to be somewhat different. It's going to be, and I think this is what Watson was really stressing, it's going to be tailored to Watson's strength and customized to what he does. And he said that's a lot of responsibility. but he likes having that weight on his shoulder. So I think we're going to see a Deshaun Watson-centric offense, which only makes sense when you're paying the guy $230 million, right? It should be, and the responsibility is on him. If he doesn't play like an elite quarterback, this team will not reach its goals. And to me, that's the underlying story, underlining thread of the entire season. And yeah, he kind of said as much yesterday.
I think we've probably touched on it on every podcast, and you hear it all the time. But I was actually thinking about this morning. I don't know what made me think about it, but I was trying to think about how successful the Browns will be this year and how so many people think that they just have so much talent on this roster, which you can't argue that. They have a ton of talent. But at the end of the day, and I'm not telling anything to anyone, you know, that they probably don't already know, but if you get the Watson that we saw in Houston, the Pro Bowler, this team's going to be really good. And if you don't, they won't. I mean, it's pretty much that simple. I mean, they won't be terrible. Even an average Watson they'll be okay. But right? I mean, yeah, it's just that's the mystery. When you try to predict how many wins the Browns are going to have, it's almost impossible because you just don't know what you're going to get out of him for sure.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Chud. And you know, I hate to make it all about the quarterback all the time, right? Because there's, you know, 52 other guys on the roster. A lot more goes into it. It's not just quarterback play. But that is the basis of this season, right? Especially given the circumstances surrounding Deshaun Watson. Now, I feel like the rest of the roster is at a point where it can support some struggles by Watson, right? Like, he doesn't have to play great all the time. And if the defensive line plays as well as the Browns hope it will with Myles Garrett and Za'Darius Smith and Obo Okoronkwo and Dalvin Tomlinson and Siaki Ika, right, if you go down the list. If the defensive line plays as well as you think, then maybe you can win some games 20-17, right? And Watson doesn't have to play great. Maybe there's days where Nick Chubb runs it 25 times for 200 yards and Watson's an afterthought, right? Or a secondary thought. But for them to be a legitimate contender and threaten the Chiefs and Bills and Bengals of the AFC, Watson has to play on a level at least approaching Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, and Joe Burrow. And it might sound simplistic, but I truly believe that. Because I don't think the rest of the Browns roster is unbelievable. Like, I don't see this as the defense carrying Watson like the 2000 Ravens, right? Or when they carried Trent Dilfer, or the, I think it was 2000, or the 85 Bears, right? Like, the defense isn't that good. I don't know if that even works in today's NFL. You know, maybe San Francisco does a little bit, but you also have Kyle Shanahan. My point is, like, the roster's good overall, I think, and it has elite players at some positions, Nick Chubb and Myles Garrett and Joel Bitonio. But I don't know if it's that much better, or if it's even that better than Baltimore and Buffalo and Kansas City and Cincinnati. So your quarterback has to play like those quarterbacks. And that's the big mystery, and that's why the Browns went out and got him, because they believed he could do that. Obviously, we did not see that over the final six games last year, and that's what needs to change in this season.
You brought him up, Myles Garrett, Nick Chubb, Joe Bitonio. They were all back at mini camp after skipping OTAs. So let's talk about Garrett now. And he spoke with the media. What are the headlines coming out of Myles Garrett's media conference with you guys?
Yeah, to me, the headline, Chud, is the excitement level he has for Za'Darius Smith as his opposite starting defensive end, how good he thinks the defensive line can be. And I think there's a contrast there with Jadeveon Clowney. And he didn't say the words Jadeveon Clowney, but we all know how that went down last year, right? It finished, you know, Clowney says what he says to Mary Kay Cabot about the team treating Myles Garrett differently. You know, Clowney is effectively suspended for the last game, not allowed to practice with the team, doesn't travel to Pittsburgh. He told the coaches he wouldn't play except on third down against the Ravens. Like, so you had all this, you had the conflict between Garrett and Clowney. And, you know, Clowney was a good player and he's a former number one overall draft pick. But when Myles Garrett says stuff like, I think he said, you know, Za'Darius is the best end I'll ever have played with. Something like that, right? I think that's a little bit of a shot at Clowney. I also think it's accurate. I think Smith, at this stage in his career, is the best player Myles Garrett will have had is that other end. And he's had good ones. You know, Emmanuel Agba was a good player. Olivier Vernon was a good player. Clowney, you know, had like 9 sacks in 2021. So he's had good players, but I think there's a reason to believe Za'Darius Smith will be the best of that group. You know, coming off a strong season, especially he had a really good first half last season before he had a knee injury. He was in that defensive player of the year discussion at the halfway point. So I think Myles Garrett has a legitimate level of excitement. He knows Jim Schwartz is going to allow the defensive lineman to play with freedom, and that excites Myles Garrett. And the snapshot for me, Chud, is you know, they don't do a lot of 11 and 11, 11 on 11 in minicamp because you're not allowed to be contact. But they lined up 11 on 11 and did like a kind of a half speed drill, right? And, you know, just to get the look of it, get the feel of having all 22 guys out there. And it was a nickel situation. So you had Myles Garrett at his spot at right end, Dalvin Tomlinson, the free agent defensive tackle next to him, Smith at the left tackle spot, and Oboe at the left end spot. So you have your three best edge rushers on the field at the same time with your big money free agent acquisition in Dalvin Tomlinson. And like that's what the Browns envisioned, right? When Andrew Berry signed those guys and traded for those guys, and Jim Schwartz looks at his defense, he says, in passing situations, I can put these four guys on the field, and they're going to go get the quarterback. And if you can get your three best pass rushers in on the field in a set together, that should scare the opponent and it should be really effective. And Smith has proved throughout his career he can rush from inside. He's a good interior pass rusher. So just that look, I think, is what the Browns see being one of the keys to the season is their D-line is going to be tough to stop.
Now, you brought up Jim Schwartz, and I think this quote goes back to not a quote, but just I guess it's kind of a quote. But basically the topic of, I think it goes back to last week, but basically Schwartz said happiness is not his concern. Yeah. Basically happiness of the players. That was sometimes you get those sound bites that kind of stand out, and that was one of them.
Yeah, to me that speaks to a couple of levels, right? He was asked about Greg Newsome, and his point was, hey, if Newsome doesn't want to play in the slot, I don't care, right? My happiness or his happiness is not my concern. Like that was the point. That's how that quote started. Now he did say Greg Newsom's been outstanding. He's been good in the slot. He's been good outside. He hasn't given us any trouble. But I think it also speaks to just how Jim Schwartz carries himself. And there's an, I don't know if arrogance is the right word. There's certainly a confidence that he exudes. There's an ego to Jim Schwartz, just how he walks around. He's super smart. I talked to Oboe yesterday, and I'm going to, at some point before training camp, right? I got a couple of these one-on-one interviews I'm going to write, but I was talking to Oboe about Schwartz. And he said, yeah, he carries himself like that, but he's got great energy, and you can tell how smart he is, right? And the players like that. I think they really appreciate coaches who are smart and they believe are putting them in the best positions to succeed. And we see that with Bill Belichick, right? And Schwartz is a little bit of a Belichick disciple. But just watching Schwartz operate on the field, that quote makes sense, right? It kind of follows with who Jim Schwartz is. You know, he's known to be a yeller. I wrote in a story the other day, I tried to just paint this picture. When they do these 7-on-7 drills, you know, there's no lineman. So he stands next to the person hiking the ball, right? So you have the center. It's not always a center, but it's somebody snapping the ball to the quarterback. He stands like right in front of that guy looking at his defense. And he said, I want them to feel my presence. You know, he also wants to hear how they communicate, right? It's a new system. But he's just in the middle of everything. And that's how he carries himself. And that's how he wants to have this impact on his defense.
You brought up Newsome. I think we'd have to hit the story in the news with getting robbed the other night. You want to touch on that? I'm sure most of the listeners know most about it, but if you want to bring them up to speed and what exactly happened there with Perrion Winfrey.
Yeah, that's the last. That was the last thing on my list of things we had to hit, Chud. Is so yeah, we, in a separate incident, Dimitri Felton had his car stolen from a parking garage. I think where he lived downtown, it got stolen. That's an incident in its own right. And his helmet was in the car. There's like I think they wound up recovering the helmet. Separately, on late Sunday night, so it's like 3:30 in the morning Monday. Greg Newsome and Perrion Winfrey are at a club downtown. They go to the car, or they go to Newsome's truck, and according to them, according to the police report, six masked men robbed them at gunpoint. They took jewelry from Newsome that he was wearing, and they took his truck. Both those guys were there. They were both part of the robbery. Newsome and Winfrey, like, they're both victims in the robbery. That's what they told police. So obviously that's a scary situation. The overriding sentiment is relief from Stefanski, from Myles Garrett. Myles Garrett was really strong on just, hey, I'm glad these guys are okay. I'm glad they're still here with us, right? Because you don't know what could happen in that type of situation. Newsome has practiced this week. Winfrey is not. He's in the building. He's working inside. Stefanski said he's healthy. He wouldn't get into it any more than that. Wouldn't go to any more details. But it's certainly scary. You know, I'm sure I know that Kevin Stefanski and the organization have talked to the team about, okay, how do we handle ourselves? How do we keep ourselves in good situations? You know, obviously these guys are free Americans, right? They can do whatever they want. You know, is it necessarily a great idea to be out at 3:30 in the morning? You know, we could have that discussion, obviously, but certainly that doesn't mean you should be robbed, right? You should be able to be out at 3:30 in the morning and go to your truck and be okay. So it's a bad situation, but it's the Browns are taking solace in the fact that Newsome and Winfrey are okay.
All right, so pretty good there. Then we hit all the topics that you wanted to get to. That's what I call getting it done.
You're a professional, Chud.
But guess what? We have overtime. We have two more minutes. Geez, I'm going to put you rapid fire, okay?
Love it.
There's actually a couple more things, but I'm going to give you 20 seconds for each. Can you do it?
Sure, why not?
All right. So number one, Cade York.
Yeah, 5 out of 6 yesterday. First time we got to see him kick this offseason, went 5 out of 6 in a field goal drill. Missed one wide left. It was a bad kick. What I thought was interesting is Jimmy Haslam and Kevin Stefanski stood like right behind him watching the drill. And I don't know if you see the owner that eclopes for a field goal drill very often.
Right. Hey, that's right on 20 seconds. Nicely done. Amari Cooper, you already touched on it, but any concerns with him at all with the health?
No. He said he had a couple of hiccups in the recovery, but nothing that was unexpected. Feels good. He said, God willing, he'll be 100% for training camp.
Overall, the health of this team right now, anything we should be concerned about?
No, it's pretty good. You know, I think the three guys to watch are three guys that we've had to watch the whole time, and that's linebackers Anthony Walker Jr. and Sione Takitaki, right? They're coming off major injuries and surgery last year. And then Jakeem Grant Sr., the running or the receiver returner, had the torn Achilles in training camp last year. So haven't practiced. We saw Grant catching some punts, but hasn't been practicing, obviously. We'll have to see where they are at the start of training camp. Maybe some of them are ready, maybe not. But they need those linebackers, right? Because they don't have a whole lot of depth. So I think they're counting on at least one of those guys to be ready week one, if not both of them.
All right, last thing, 20 seconds. West Virginia, here we come. How do the players and Stefanski feel about it?
Yeah, I mean, Stefanski, it's his idea, right? He wants to go. He thinks it's best for bonding, eliminate distractions. The players said all the right things yesterday. I think off the record, they would tell you they're not, I think some of them at least, would tell you they're not thrilled to leave home for 10 days and it's going to be hot in West Virginia. But I think they're going to try to make most of it and make it a team chemistry building because that was an issue last year.
All right. Well, there you go. West Virginia here, the Browns come, the golf course here, Scott Petrak comes. That's after one more day of work here today.
That's exactly right, Chud. So yeah, thank you, Chud. We'll take a little break here. We got the off season, assuming there's not any craziness that happens. But then we'll reconvene. Before you know it, we'll be doing we'll be getting everybody ready for training camp, right? There'll be plenty of talk about heading into training camp. So Chud, you take a little bit of downtime. Enjoy summer. But you know, I'll text you if something happens. So
I know I can always expect a text from you if there's breaking Browns news, which exactly. You know it comes.
I know. And even if there's not, it won't be too long before we do this again. But Thanks everybody for listening. This has been another episode of Zone Coverage, and you can read all my work at brownzone.com. Thanks a lot.